Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Okay, so here's our first interview with Tristan from FDR, First Development Resources. And Tristan, welcome on the day that you listed on the London Stock Exchange. I bet you thought this day was never going to come a few times.
Thanks for having me. Look, you're right. It's the FDR journey, God, I hate using that phrase, has been a long one. It's not certainly not been linear, the path from pre-IPO to admission. You know, I always say I had a full head of hair and weighed about 3 stone. Like, you know, I can't use that excuse forever. And but no, look, to stand on the balcony today and genuinely with the advisors and my colleagues and the board, and literally the army of people that have helped us get this over the line. You know, it was a really very proud moment. It was a really cool moment. The whole market open thing, it's a bit, you know, it's a gimmicky thing, I guess, but it's, I think the stock exchange really do like to see new companies listing. They obviously want to see more companies list, and they do put on a good show. So it was a great morning, really exciting, and now we just can't wait to get started.
So tell us, I mean, in terms of the listing side of things, you've obviously come out of a spin out of Power Metal Resources. So how important is Power Metal Resources in your story? One, for having the patience, obviously, for the 3 years between pre-IPO and now this. And going forward, I think they supported you in the IPO as well. So tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, certainly. Look, Power Metal, you know, we are the second full spin-out from the Power Metal stable, as I'm sure your viewers and listeners are very familiar with. Obviously, we would love to replicate the success of Guardian Metals, similar type of format, obviously very different projects, but it's the same. We're all part of the same model, if you like, the spin-out model. So, look, Power Metal will remain a supportive shareholder. They're locked in for 12 months and then an orderly market arrangement thereafter. But equally, you know, the wider Power Metal family coming from that stable, I've got you know, colleagues across the different businesses on a technical front, on a corporate front, who, you know, a great position, well, very, very well positioned, you know, for advice, support, or, you know, a second pair of eyes on something which is, you know, the technical elements of the projects. You know, obviously all within the rules of what we can and can't say, but, you know, to be a small company connected to a bigger, smaller company obviously presents great opportunity to tap into a wealth of experience, understanding, and resource. So Power Metal will be a supportive shareholder. You know, they are the reason why we're here, and, you know, long may that relationship continue into the future.
Yeah, when we met Oliver in London and we were going to catch up with yourself a couple of weeks ago, yeah, I can see that even within GMET, yourselves, Power Metal, there is a lot of people who can help each other. And I think that will help rather than just being standalone. I suppose my one question I have before I pass it over to Charles is, what is your offering?
Great question. Essentially, look, FDR, we are an exploration company, but I think what sets us apart is that we're going to get after these opportunities. We're not going to be shy at putting money to work in the hope of, you know, doing the good work to increase our chances of making that discovery. We've got 3 projects in the Paterson province of Western Australia, and, you know, everyone's familiar with the Paterson. You know, people can't talk about the Paterson without referring to Greatland, particularly on the back of their dual listing and I guess the developments that they've made from discovery through to obviously now approaching operations with Javier on, and they are a great example of what success can look like for a junior resource company, particularly one that's listed on London as well. But it's not just, you know, Greatland. You've got Rio Tinto and the North Winner Discovery deposit is just well, I say next door by Australian standards. There's long established mines like Telfer and Nifty. I think the Paterson remains an interesting exploration frontier. It is undercover, we know that, but again, you can only find things if you're prepared to go looking for them, and that's exactly what we want to do. But it's not just about the Paterson. We've also got Western Australia. We've got the Celta project targeting everything from copper and gold to lithium, uranium, rare earths. And the main difference between the Wallal or the Paterson projects and Celta is that Celta, all the geology is outcropping, so you're tripping over pegmatites, which may contain lithium. You know, you can actually get down, see the rocks, and because it's early stage, you know, all data that we collect now is good data, and it'll all go to enhancing our understanding of the license area, within which we've got 9 targets already defined, 4 of which have been prioritised, and we'd like to send a team out to Celta whilst we're drilling Wallal in the next few months. So I guess to sum that up, Kevin, we are about making the discovery, but doing the, like, taking on the risk, if you like, and doing the exploration work in order to do that.
Yeah, awesome. That's a good executive summary. I guess we're going to start with the Wollar project because obviously it's the key project in the portfolio. Three magnetic bullseye targets, all fully permitted, right? Ready to go, ready to drill, nothing in the way. We're just going to go straight for it. That's my first question.
Yeah, so it's been a long warm-up for FDR. I mean, we're very cognizant of the fact we've been working on achieving our listing for 3 years, but the fact is that the listing is just the start line for the business. This is where the hard work starts. It's also where for me, the fun starts. So in order to be ready to go, we have spent the time to ensure that all the necessary approvals and permissions are in place. The Wollar project, as you correctly point out, there are three magnetic bullseye anomalies that we have identified in the geophysics. Of the three, we've got the eastern anomaly is our primary focus. That's the one we'd like to drill. That one and the border anomaly, which straddles the border with Rio next door. Those two particular sites have been cleared from a heritage clearance survey perspective. So therefore, we've been out with the traditional owners, walk the ground to ensure that there's no sites of significant or specific archaeological or ethnographic significance. So we've got that. I don't
All
want to downplay it.
sorted.
We've got that tick in the box, but it's a prerequisite, and that's been done. We have a good relationship with the station holders. We've spent the time to work with a drilling contractor to ensure that they're ready to go. And based on the most recent communication I've received from our legal team in Perth, there is nothing to stop us from rolling onto site, and that's what we're working up to do as we speak.
Excellent, excellent. And I've got a question for you. So these magnetic anomalies, right? And you look on the map, the eastern magnetic is 2.5 by 2.5 kilometers, and the western magnetic is 5 by 5. And I guess the question is, why would you go for the eastern magnetic first over the western, which is larger?
Yeah, it's a good question. So, look, the first thing you have to be really clear about that these are geophysical targets, Charles. As you know, well know, these targets have been identified through the reprocessing of historical geophysical data, which we've been supplemented with our own 2D seismic surveys over the eastern anomaly. From a geological perspective, we know that where these features are located is effectively the Wollar Basin. So you're coming across from a shallower. If you imagine the geology is shallower on the shelf, and then as you come down the ramp, if you like, into the basin, the overburden gets deeper, so the targets become deeper. The western anomaly, yes, you're right in terms of its area, 5 by 5 kilometers. We believe that it's a few hundred meters deeper than the eastern and the border anomaly. Hence the reason why we're focusing on I guess the more accessible targets.
Shallower.
Yeah,
Got it. Okay,
exactly.
that's easy.
A
That's a
long answer
straight.
to say yes, they're shallower. Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's all right. That's fine. But the thing is, sometimes the questions like that, which people may not have an answer to, it's actually really useful, So we've got these direct comparisons between Havieron, which everybody is comparing to, but also Rio Tinto's Winu deposit.
Yeah.
And I guess, can you just explain in a bit more detail how these magnetic anomalies, specifically the Eastern magnetic anomaly, because that's what we're focusing on first, how is it similar to these two deposits?
Yeah, look,
In layman's terms, it
yeah,
might be
sure. Look,
hard to do.
yeah, look, and I guess first of all, we've got to be clear, right? Anyone who's got anything that bears any kind of resemblance to something like Havieron, of course they're going to be pointing to it. Of course they're going to be saying we're the next Greatland. We're not saying that. Just to be absolutely clear, we've got a geophysical anomaly which was identified through a similar process that identified Havieron. In it gets the highest level of understanding the geophysical response of the Havieron discovery using similar techniques was 80 nanoteslas. I think it's 1.5 by 1.5 kilometers in area. Whereas the eastern anomaly, it's 100 nanoteslas, so it's got a slightly stronger signal and it's a slightly bigger in its area, but it's also slightly deeper. These undercover geophysical targets, Charles, they it's effectively multicolored blobs on a piece of paper. It's only when we drill it that we actually can test whether the signature of what we believe we've got at Wollar is similar to that which is found at Havieron. But what we do know is that underpinning the entire Paterson region, from the coastline where we are in the north, all the way under the Wollar project area, under all Rio's ground, down towards where Telfer, Nifty, and Havieron is, it's the same system. Okay, so it's the same geological environment. So we know there are faults, extensive faults within the area, again similar to what runs through Havieron, which these faults could be the conduit for hydrothermal mineralization migrating from depth. But ultimately, I can talk about what it could be all day long, but until we stick our into it, we don't know. And that's why it's tremendously exciting that we are going to come onto market and we are going to start drilling. And within a couple of weeks of getting that rig turning, we'll know what's down there. We would love to see, some copper gold mineralization.
It's really exciting, isn't it? It must be very exciting after 3 years for you. I guess the other question is, you're in the Paterson. Copper gold is most likely, but the region is just covered in metal, right? There's a good chance you'll find something else, isn't there, as well, while you're out there.
There is. I mean, we're going to find there's something's causing that response. Now, we don't think it's water. We think because it's where it sits in the Proterozoic, it's beneath the sedimentary where it sits above
So
it.
it shouldn't be, yeah.
But yeah, so you know, it's we know that there've been sniffs of sulfides in and around, when I say the area, you know, within a, let's say, a 20 km radius of the eastern anomaly, and we know that Winu sits in a similar geological environment. So I guess on a very high level, on a geophysical level, the smoke's there, but now it's a question, as I keep saying, of sticking a hole into it to see whether the spark is sitting underneath it, which might put a fire under the whole thing, and wouldn't that be fantastic?
It would be absolutely fantastic. I mean, I guess the question is, you drill the eastern magnetic anomaly, whether you find something or not, is the border magnetic or the western magnetic your next target after that?
It'll be the border anomaly.
The border and then the western.
Yeah, there's I think that, well, there is additional work that we can do on from surface at the border anomaly. We could do some more seismic across it to really try to constrain. That was the third anomaly that was found through the reprocessing of the seismic of the historical geophysical data. So there is a little bit more work that we could do on that, but really the focus in the short term is to stick an initial hole into the eastern anomaly, which is comprised of two lobes, an eastern lobe and a western lobe. You know, these things, they are big, as I say. We've been able to constrain the geometry of the thing and obviously the depth of it, you know, to within a certain kind of tolerance, because it's all based on seismic
Yeah.
geophysics. So it's yeah, it's going to be tremendously exciting. But you know, one hole doesn't make it, isn't it? Just doesn't make or break a discovery. It obviously can have a very positive impact if the results are what you hope for when it comes from a share price perspective. But based on the nature of the people who are operating in the area, based on the, I guess, the profile of the Patterson and its potential, I like to think that if we get a sniff, I think we'll get a lot of interest from people looking over the fence,
Well,
Charlie,
when you
which is
say
kind of our hope, you know.
looking over the fence, I mean, the fence is Rio Tinto's exploration tenure, right? And I guess the question is, I mean, obviously, if you find something, then that they will be interested because it's right next door to them, so it would make sense. Is there any kind of data sharing going on there that, or is it, maybe you can't say. I just imagine there would be, just to help each other out.
So I think it's probably fair to say, Charles, that people, I like to think people will be taking note, whether you're a tiny little company like FDR or a bigger company. I think the fact that if there's a company that's prepared to actually to roll the dice, shall we say, on a drill campaign, you know, I think it will just generate interest, generally speaking. Now, you know, Rio, they're a big company. They're an entity in themselves on a massive scale. But in terms of the smaller companies in and around the Paterson, you know, certainly ones that have got an association with London, we've been building a relationship with companies within the area for a long time. Because, you know, as far as I'm concerned, all of the junior spaces, we should be working together, because we're not really in competition with each other apart from investment. But when it comes to the end game, I would argue that most people will have a similar business model to what juniors are there for, which is to make the discoveries and then pass them up the chain to the bigger companies who take them forward. So anything that we can do to help benefit ourselves, whether that be just speaking with guys who are exploring in the region, who've got the experience, speaking with the drilling contractors who've worked on different projects in the Paterson, we've done that. We've got a great network on the ground, and yeah, we're really excited just to get started. And I guess to round that out, you know, we will be looking to maximize any data share if the possibility exists, or at least be open to the to you know, being open with anyone who's got an interest in what we're doing, if that makes sense.
Yes, it really does. Yeah, I just it's a very exciting because it's right next door to a major, and obviously that kind of mineralogy play is always fun. And then the fact that we don't have to wait 1,000 years to get all of the permitting in place and all of the geophysics and whatever else, and we're just going straight to drilling, that's exciting too. Moving on, so Ripon Hills and Braeside West, these in the east, in the Eastern Pilbara. Talk to me a little bit about these ones.
Yeah, certainly. So Braeside and Ripon, I'm not going to. Our focus is on Willalen
No,
and the
so
Northern
yeah.
Territory project. But that being said, you know, in their own right, we've done work with our geophysical and geological consultants in Western Australia. Braeside in particular, you know, we've identified, well, you can see on some of our imagery on our website, you know, you can see the surface expression of these deep-seated northwest southeast trending fault structures, which, you know, basically cross-cut that the geology of that area. On neighbouring ground held by Australian listed Rumble Resources, you know, they've done some fantastic work targeting those fault structures, and they've, you know, identified over 40 high priority targets for further investigation, and that's for gold and precious and base metals. All right, you know, of course, just because it's there doesn't always necessarily mean that it's here. But using them as a great example, we've been able to define a number of targets already that we'd like, that, you know, effectively our walk-up drill-ready targets essentially, but there is additional permitting which will be required in order to get a rig on the ground at Braeside West and Ripon Hills in particular. Yeah.
Yeah, so these are, I don't want to use the term back burner, especially on the IPO, but they're in the permitting stage, and once you get there, then you can
Yeah,
drill
but
them.
we've completed the desktop studies, so the targets have been established. But we want to hit the high impact opportunity that Well all presents, and as we'll discuss in a minute, I guess the wealth of opportunity that Celta may present as well.
Yeah, I mean, Celta is the other one because obviously the focus is on Mullal and on the drilling and on the gold, as it should be. But Celta, particularly its proximity to the Nolans deposit, I think it's still owned by Arafura, isn't it? The SX, yeah. But I mean, Arafura is Nolans is a world class rare earths deposit. Obviously, rare earths are kind of center stage politically. Then also, Northern Territory does hold some of the highest grade uranium deposits in the world, even though nuclear energy is a bit of a no-no from there. And you're kind of looking at this project and you think this one is also really, really exciting, right?
It is, and one of the great things about working in Australia is that they've got that, I guess, that framework of regulation that you work within, and the data which is you have to supply to the state or the territory in terms of when you do work, there is this repository of effectively publicly accessible information which can contain 50, 60 years of exploration that's been done throughout the region. And we've obviously been able to take all of that historical work and use that to help and better understand what the potential of Celta may or may not be. And what's interesting is, when you go through all the historical files, as you do in any part of the world, you'll see how the focus has shifted, whether it be from nickel, gold, copper, most recently rare earth elements. And to your point about the uranium side of things, yeah, there are certain restrictions in certain jurisdictions, but we all know that the world is constantly changing, and the chances of uranium forming a bigger part of the energy mix, it's probably going to happen. So if regulation changes and these opportunities are available to explore for on a, I guess, in a more meaningful way, we're well positioned to be able to do that. And we've identified a uranium roll front to the north west of the property. But in the short term, Charles, it is about the gold. I think the gold and the lithium and the rare earths is where we'll be focusing initially.
With Celta, yeah. Is Celta drill ready as well, or you
No,
still have
it's not drill
work to
ready
do?
yet, but as I say, it is early stage. But because of the nature of the geology, we can get boots on the ground and do non-destructive work off the bat. So things like stream sediment sampling, rock chip sampling,
Rock chip,
mapping,
yeah.
that first pass of systematic methodical exploration, which you have to do, right? But because we'll be the first company to do it in a methodical way, specifically for the metals that we're looking for on that piece of ground, all data is good data, and we hope that we'll be able to hopefully very quickly generate news flow which demonstrates that there's again a spark there. But there's definitely a lot of smoke. It's about finding that spark, and if we can then move things to a drill-ready status as efficiently as we can, that's what we will do. And the gold opportunity, that extension of the Reynolds Range, which has got some fantastic gold grades to the south, that extends onto our ground. And that part of the license area, the surface expression of the geomorphology is relatively benign. It's ideal for like, let's say, an RC drill out, relatively shallow RC drill out, assuming we can get the permissions in place.
I mean, the thing is with Celta, in my perspective anyway, is that the chances are you may not find like a standout grade for like any particular metal, but it's polymetallic, right? This is what you're looking for. So it's IOCG, ISCG mineralization, potentially, uranium, iron, copper, gold, silver, tungsten, molybdenum, tin,
Yeah, look,
everything.
it's a smorgasbord of opportunity. It's one way to describe it. We always use that ridiculous phrase. But the point is, it gives us flexibility, it gives us an optionality. And due to as I keep saying, the nature of the geology there being so close to the surface, you can do pretty meaningful exploration at a relatively low cost, but generate that impactful news flow, which is obviously what we want to do.
Okay, so final question from me, and then I'll hand it back over to Kev. With Wollal, drill ready. We know where you're going to put the drill. How soon do you want the drilling to start, and when do you think you might get some initial indications from that drill core?
So we've made a big thing about the fact that we're ready to go, and we want to get rolling as soon as possible. So let's say in August, that's when we want to have a rig turning. We obviously want to make sure that, as I've we're going to double cross all the T's and then dot all the I's to make sure that there's nothing that will bite us in the in the backside from a regulatory perspective. We're very confident that everything's in place. We've got a drilling contractor that's lined up. They're assembling a drill crew as we speak. There's a little bit of touching up of the access and the drill pad, which is a day's work for a guy with a blade on an excavator or whatever. So let's say we get drilling, I don't know, before the end of August. I would like to think that within 3 months of commencement, results will be returned. But
Excellent.
caveating that point very heavily with the fact that geology is never straightforward when it comes to drilling. There are
We won't hold you to a
gauntlets and
specific
infinite number
date.
of challenges
No,
that you have
no.
to come against. But that's part of it. That's part of the process, and that's what makes it exciting. Either
Yeah.
way, we just hope that we can get it down. We can get a stick it into that Proterozoic rock and test these targets. There's something that's creating this response. Wouldn't it be fantastic if it was, what it could be potentially?
I think what it is, right, is when the core comes out, and there's a lot of mineralization where you can't see the metals in the core. In Australia, where you are at the moment, I suspect you'll be able to physically see it, especially particularly gold if it's there. Cross your fingers and
Let's
hope.
say, I mean, I guess people often refer to the drill as the wand of truth or the lie detector. People
The lie
often say
detector is
how
my
we expect
favorite.
exploration companies to do some work. We want to do the work. We want to test these things. We want to do what we said we were going to do, and we want to give ourselves the best chance of making the discovery.
Fantastic. Yeah, over to you.
So, Tristan, what is the depth that you're going for in the drill? And the second thing is, what would be a success?
Yeah, it's good. It's
What would
a great it's a great question. Look, the Eastern Anomaly is a deep undercover target, Kevin, right? So it's difficult to pin a specific depth. We've said in the investor presentation, we've put a depth of 800 meters to the Proterozoic. In my opinion, that's a conservative base case. I think it will be between 600 and 800 meters. Now, that straight off the bat sounds like, well, that's a deep hole. Yes, it is. But the scale of the thing, 2.5 kilometers by 2.5 kilometers, depth is no longer the limiting factor when it comes to a mine setup, right? There's plenty of examples around the world of mines that have been, built to achieve depths well in excess of what we're looking to drill to. The hole's targeted to end at 1,250 meters, that initial hole. Again, based on the size of the anomaly, we're not going to be able to drill through it. No chance. It's huge. But hopefully we'll be able to get some good understanding as to what is down there. I mean, we can then plan any future phases based on the data that we get. That's how it'll play out from this point onwards. It's about understanding. The results from the drill will be anything that comes next will be dictated completely by what we find in that first hole. And the second part of the question, look, we're not doing this for research. We're doing this to make a discovery. Any hole, any excavation, whether it be a drill hole or a sticking a spoon in the ground, there's people who can take data from anything and use it to better understand that environment. We're not doing this. It's not an academic exercise. We are doing this to test the target in the hope that we find economic mineralization. But of course, one hole doesn't make or break a project. But equally, a good result will make the next phase of work a lot easier to plan, a lot easier to potentially, get the necessary get more into the business to allow us to do more work. Success is allowing the Wellhole project to continue beyond one hole, really,
Yeah.
Kevin.
And
That's my point.
ultimately, for people who don't know, the Paterson Country is called Elephant Country in Australia. And ultimately, you don't basically find small deposits of gold and copper in these areas. It's either going to be a monster or it's not going to be there. Is that fair?
I think it's perhaps not as binary as that, but that's, I guess, how the market will perceive it. And yeah, you're right. It is Elephant Country, and the where we acquired the projects from. There is a good they're from a great, I guess, lineage, if that's the right word. The guys who held our ground for 40 years were the founders of De Grey Mining, for example. The guy who had it for 40 years, he believed there was another monster lurking beneath the Paterson Sands, and we want
Yeah.
to find him.
We're going to find out over the next few weeks and months whether there is. So if you're interested in joining the journey, and I mean, I think we all know if you do find it, what's going to happen to the share price. It's going to go bananas, basically. But let's see what happens. It pays your money, it takes your choice. And yeah, good luck. And we look forward to speaking to you in the not too distant with the first lot of news.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks very much, gents. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk today. As I say, on our first day of trading, fantastic.
Congratulations.
Yeah,
Thank you.
congratulations, and yeah, enjoy.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.